Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello, I'm joined today by someone I've always wanted to have on this show. Betsy Ham is our guest. She's the CEO of Duck Donuts, and it's one of the fastest growing donut franchises in the nation. Betsy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to hear all about your story, but the duck story. It's amazing to me and kind of maybe fortuitous. The idea, I guess, actually grew up in my neighborhood. My neighbor, Russ, is the founder. And if you would tell us the story, you know, how it comes from a little neighborhood in Pennsylvania and turns into this international business. What was the idea behind it and how did it come about?
Sure. So it's crazy. It really did stem out of your neighborhood, right? So as you mentioned, Russ, who is the founder, Russ DiGilio, had a beach house in the Outer Banks and they used to go down there. And, you know, one night they were sitting around, he admits drinking some wine and reminiscing about these warm donuts that they used to get in the boardwalk as kids growing up. And at the time, in 2007, Outer Banks was pretty much a little sleepy town. There wasn't really even any donut shops that were there. So what started out as a whim, when they the next day they decided like, hey, this really has some legs. Let's create a donut concept and open it here in the Outer Banks. And Russ is a serial entrepreneur, but did not have any food and beverage experience. So reached out to one of his friends who helped put together the concept of Duck Donuts. So the first two shops opened in Duck and Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, hence the name Duck. And it took a few years to catch on, but after about the third season, because of course it's very seasonal location in the Outer Banks, it really took off. And the people who came there every year just continued to create this cult-like following for the brand. And people were asking him to, you know, open up in my hometown, send me donuts in the mail. Like, I want these donuts more than once a year when I go on vacation. So Russ realized that there was this really huge opportunity that he couldn't miss and decided to start a franchising company. So they sold their first franchise in 2013 in Williamsburg, Virginia. And now fast forward to 2024, where we have about 150 shops in the United States in 22 or 24 states, actually. And then we're also in 6 countries outside the US, which has been crazy. So I had the opportunity, actually, we opened in Thailand a few months ago and Russ came along with me for the opening. And I said, did you ever imagine you would be in Thailand listening to people speak Thai, talking about Duck Donuts, being so excited for this concept that just started as something fun for you to do? And you know, he's so humble about it. And he's just like, absolutely not. He's like, I had no idea that something that started as like a fun side project in the Outer Banks would literally be, you know, sprinkling happiness across the globe. It's pretty crazy.
It's awesome. I mean, and you obviously stay close to the brand in everything you guys do, which I personally truly respect and appreciate. I think that's fantastic. Talk about your journey, your Duck Donut journey. Where did you start out and how did you come about this duck opportunity?
Sure. So I spent the first really half, I guess, of my career at Hershey Entertainment Resorts in marketing. So various marketing roles for the sweetest place on earth, which of course was a really amazing job. But it's really always kept my ear out there for if there's any opportunities that came up that made sense. And a friend of mine had said, Duck Donuts is opening their corporate headquarters here in the Harrisburg area where I live in Pennsylvania. They want someone to come in and build their marketing team. And to be honest, I had never even heard of Duck Donuts. I had never been to the Outer Banks. But I had texted a few of my girlfriends who did go every year. I said, hey, this Duck Donuts place in the Outer Banks, like they're looking for a marketing person. And they both were so emphatic about the fact that I had to take this interview. Like, it's the best thing ever. That would be the most amazing dream job. And I'm like, wow, these ladies are so excited about a donut concept. So with that excitement, I definitely had to take the interview and came in and met with Russ, who was the CEO at the time, and of course, the founder and the COO. And, you know, Russ painted this picture of here's this brand that people who know it love it. And we want to make it, at the time, we were sticking to the US, a national brand. So having that opportunity as a marketing person to come in and, you know, there's this love and loyalty for this brand, but we have to make it more sophisticated. Of course, it was very mom and pop when it started out. So having the opportunity to come in and start from scratch of, you know, logos and brand voice and style. And I remember talking to the marketing person who was here at the time. I'm like, why are we not posting pictures on social of donuts? Like, we keep using these illustrated donuts and there's a couple ducks going on. And she said, well, we don't have any pictures of donuts. I was like, oh, so you know, had this opportunity to kind of start at the base of the foundation and really help take this brand and make it more sophisticated and elevate it as we've continued to grow. So started with the company 7 years ago in a marketing capacity. And probably about a year and a half after I was here, Russ said, you know, I think you should take on more ended up getting promoted to COO, which, you know, they don't usually let marketing people in charge of operations, but managed
for good
to,
reason, by the way, for very good reason.
Yeah. Hey, it worked out. So did the COO role for a few years. And then it was almost 3 years ago, which is crazy. You know, Russ was always very clear that at some point he's going to take this company as far as he could, would need to bring in some additional expertise, additional cash. So he sold the company to a private equity group in April of 2021. And at that time is then, you know, when I was promoted to CEO. So it's been That's a awesome. Wild journey and something I would have never anticipated, you know, 8-10 years ago when I never had even heard of the brand, let alone to be a CEO.
It's amazing. And congratulations. It's awesome. I mean, I guess I can understand, certainly don't have a global business, but I started out as just a marketing guy, a creative guy, started my own business and now I'm CEO. And it's sort of like, it's amazing what you did then and who you were then and what you do now. I mean, talk a little bit about that. I mean, that's gotta be different. And not that you don't get to do it now, but you're this marketing person. You brought the fun, you sprinkled the fun into everyone's life, that kind of thing. And your personality exudes that. And now you have to be CEO. What's that like?
Yeah. You know, it's making sure you're staying focused on the right stuff and letting the experts and on the team do their job. And, you know, it's funny because, and you mentioned this, like with your career, sometimes you do things that you don't even realize do have an impact on where you end up. You probably didn't think that you were going to open your own agency and be the CEO. And that was certainly never on my, you know, 10-20 year plan. So I think sometimes as you go through and have these experiences, sometimes it starts to become a little bit more clear that this may work. And I remember when Russ talked about selling the company, I was like, oh, they're going to bring somebody in. But during that time, it was COVID. And, you know, he had kind of taken a step back and was like, hey, I'm going to let you run this. I'm here to support you. I'm here for assistance. And that's what I was like, wait a minute, I kind of like this. And I kind of like the direction we're going. So, you know, let's continue to head down that path. But it is different because, you know, you have to let the experts and the team around you and just make sure I'm providing tools, resources, make sure I have the right people in the right seats. So it's very different in the day to day and, you know, trying to make sure I don't just gravitate towards, you know, one department or anything like that, that I have that well-rounded understanding of what ops is doing. And obviously the financials is a huge piece of the success of the company. So yeah, you definitely have to be a lot more well-rounded, but I think having the right people around you makes that a lot easier to do.
No doubt. No doubt. Did the whole financial side of things, did that come easy to you? Or is that like something you had because we all do, we gravitate towards what we love to do, right? And I think you have a very good lesson in there that you got to be, got to love all your kids the same. You got to yes. deal with all the things with the same amount of passion and vigor as you would the things you love to do. So did that come easy to you? I mean, was that something that was pretty natural or?
You know, it wasn't too bad. I think even when I was at Hershey, I think very early in my career, I had the opportunity to be exposed to a lot of different departments. I mean, we worked very closely with operations and we needed to understand the operations mindset. And I actually went back to grad school. I think it was out of undergrad, probably like 2 years to get my MBA. And part of that was the financial piece of it and to give the marketing person credibility that, look, I understand a P&L, I understand numbers. I might not be able to sit there and be an accountant or a financial analyst, but, you know, give me the data and I can make decisions. So luckily I had a bit of a knack for that. And again, just as that kind of was something I needed to focus on and admit when you don't understand something, I think is huge. I think we all want to not always show our weaknesses. So people pretend like they maybe understand something. So, you know, not being afraid to ask those questions or saying, time out, I need to understand why this happens or what does this mean or why do we care about EBITDA or whatever it is. I think it's really important to ask those questions.
I think that honesty, that honesty and clarity and transparency is huge. I mean, it wasn't even joking. When I started my company, it was funny. I got quoted in some of the trades and my friends framed it and sent it to me because they thought it was a joke. I said, my business model is pretty simple. My goal is to be the dumbest person in the building. And, you know, I want to hire everybody in the company smarter, better, brighter than I am at whatever it is that they have to do. And it's always worked. It's sort of a secret weapon.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know, in ask questions and hopefully, you know, you'll get the right answers and grow from it. So, 100 locations, 22 states, Saudi Arabia. I mean, how do you manage that? You go from the marketing side of things to now, like, what's the secret? How do you manage that growth?
It is challenging. And I think even when you have one location of a brand, it's hard, right? But then when you multiply that times 100 and you have different owners running each of these local businesses, it's certainly challenging. So we try to set franchisees up for success in the beginning from a training standpoint. And here's how we do things. And this is what Duck Donuts looks like and sounds like. And this is how we're going to operate. And you know, the one thing that I keep really hammering home to the franchisees is we want Duck Donuts to be known for a superior product with an exceptional customer experience. And it sounds basic, but if we can be consistently a superior product and provide an exceptional customer experience, that's going to make everyone's lives better and easier, right? People are going to come back more often. The frequency will be there. So we try to provide all the tools in order for that to happen. But it's tough, you know, because it's human and people are going to kind of have their take. So, you know, sometimes on social media, if we get tagged and stuff, or there's user generated content, you sort of cringe maybe when you see the donuts that are going out the door that aren't consistent, or there are, you know, some local marketing messages that aren't on brand. So it's trying to really make sure we educate upfront what the expectation is, and then just hold people and franchisees accountable as we move forward. But if we're giving those tools and resources, it should help. But it is tough when everybody kind of has a little bit of their own opportunity to make a spin on the brand. So we do have to remind franchisees at times so that it is Duck Donuts. That's the name on the door.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because I know from personal experience, we've dealt with a lot of franchisee groups. And, you know, you have smart people that own these businesses. Mm-hmm. They have their livelihood tied into it. They have an awful lot of passion for it. But yet they have to adhere to the controls because, you know, the consistency you bring, is key. And that's the livelihood that for everybody ultimately. And I think sometimes it's tough to understand. Is there a secret? Is there a special type of franchisee that you look for? Cause I know, like, I'll say again, in my experience, I know some folks that are like master franchisees. These guys might own 5 different brands. They might have 30 different stores in one brand, and they have these like corporations. I mean, they have to have HR, finance. I mean, they're very large businesses, but they're dealing with multiple. Is there a certain type of the franchisee that's perfect for Duck Donuts?
So currently what our franchisee system looks like is we have the smaller franchisees. So a lot of them will have, you know, 2-3 locations. They've come from a different background, whether they used to be in education or in marketing or in finance, and they wanted to be a small business owner. So what really makes a franchisee successful is somebody who has that small business owner mentality. They're accountable for their success or their failure, and we'll give them all the tools and resources that they need in order to succeed. But they really have to have that drive and motivation and ability to be able to move the brand forward on that local level. And, you know, I think the one thing, because we have that smaller business model, but if it's, you know, if the average franchisee has 2 locations, they have to be in the store, right? Like, this isn't like a set it and forget it and, you know, I'll just build it and they will come. It's, you know, so easy. I mean, that's, it's a lot of work and it's constant. So our franchisees have to be able to be in the store and know what's going on. But having that ability to work on the business and not just in the business is really important. And it's hard to, you know, a lot of times you're going to get dragged into the weeds of, hey, the fryer's not working, or someone didn't show up for their shift. So it's the ability to be able to problem solve on the fly. And oh, by the way, manage a team, because now you have probably on average 17-year-olds working in your shop, and now you have 30 17-year-olds that you have to, you know, keep engaged and have them understand this brand and the concept and deliver that amazing experience. So it's an incredibly tough job. And to your point, you know, franchisees invest a ton of money, some, you know, college savings or life savings or whatever it is, to have that small business owner opportunity. So we want to do whatever we can to help support them and make that dream a reality.
That's awesome. Do you have like, is there a thing like, hey, we don't allow anybody to have more than five? Is there any kind of a corporate rule or just kind of play it out like as it goes?
No. Yeah. We do have a few that have five as the most, but no, not really. We actually just sold a 12 shop deal in Chicago last in 2023. But to your point, he is a sophisticated franchise owner that owns another brand, has the infrastructure, has the team. So I think as we grow and our brand becomes more sophisticated, we'll end up with more of those.
Gotcha.
I mean, I don't know if we'll ever end up with the franchisees who have 50 or 100 brands like some of them, but you know, 10, 20 locations, there's certainly the opportunity for that to be built out as they go.
That's awesome. So I love the custom made, you know, to order donut model. I think it's great. Your product's phenomenal. I get to try it. Obviously, it's local to me. It's at the beaches I go to. I mean, it's everywhere I go, which is awesome. That's a big part of what separates Duck Donuts from competitors like we hear of Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts. To me, it's always amazing though, because they're custom made. It is a unique, different kind of concept. And then there's a cost associated with it, which, and rightfully so, they're basically more expensive and still not a lot of money, but you know, it's one of those things. How did that all come to be? Like, what is talk about the competitors and how what separates you and the whole custom made to order concept?
Sure. So that's certainly been our differentiator is the custom made to order concept. And your donuts are always fresh, right? So when you walk into a Duck Donuts, you don't see any donuts, which is very unusual for any of our competitors. And sometimes confusing when we open in new markets or new countries that you have to go in, you have to decide what you want, and we'll make it fresh. And you get to watch the experience if you choose. So that certainly has been our differentiator is the warm, the customization, always fresh. So it's really continuing to embrace that because that is our USP, but then also make sure that we have the ability to deliver on customers' expectations if they don't want to wait. So that's been something that we've really been focused on in the last year or two. Of course, we don't have drive-throughs. We've talked about it. And right now we just think we're going to really lean into the customization and the warm piece, which would be really hard to do in a drive-through model. But what do we do from a convenience factor that if I don't want to wait for my donut, that I can get it faster? So of course, there's things like online ordering. We now have kiosks and shops as well. And we're testing some other more like grab and go opportunities here in the coming months. So we want to stay true to what's made us so successful, but also be able to reach those customer expectations from a convenience factor, which we know all has become very important over the last several years, for sure.
Absolutely. So like, I love the process of building my own personal donut. And I think it's a lot of fun. So let's have some fun. I'm going to throw some, you guys have so many great like flavors and combinations. I'm going to throw some different toppings out and I want you to tell me what you feel is the coding thing. So now you're going from marketer to now you're going to be the donut chef.
Yeah.
Donut creator. Okay. So chopped peanuts.
Chocolate.
All right. Oreo cookie pieces.
Vanilla.
Graham cracker crumbs.
Okay, so we need to add to this like chocolate and marshmallow to make it like a s'more.
There you go. Perfect. Okay. Chopped bacon.
Maple.
Very good. I would put peanut butter in there too, but that's just me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Shredded coconut.
Lemon.
Very good. I see you guys do these things with the great names and the great brands and the great taste. What's the peanut butter? It's, I forget the name of the one.
The peanut bacon. Butter in paradise.
Yes. Yes. What's the one that has the bacon on it all the time? Bacon in the sun.
Oh, bacon in the sun. Yeah, our number one selling donut is the bacon donut.
Is that right?
By far. That's not even close to the number two.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. And so like, I mean, the people, like you said, there's no donuts in the windows. People walk in. Are they at all nervous about like, oh, I've got to talk to people and make this thing. I mean, this is new to me. Is it, is there a little bit of a apprehension there or?
Absolutely.
Is there?
Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Oh, there is. And it's funny because it's something that we have been focused on the last several years. And even back to when I started never going to a Duck Donut and somebody handed me an ordering pad at the time. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. This is too much to think about. So a few years ago, we introduced an assortment guide. So at the counter, there's some counter mats that you can pick donuts that are already created. So, of course, we have seasonal donuts. We have LTO flavors. Like right now, we have a jelly donut where the jelly is just like in the middle of the donut. So we do try to make it easier because it is overwhelming and it can be a lot to think, I don't know what I want or what do I put with what, especially if you're building a half dozen or a dozen. So we do make a lot of suggestions for dozens and half dozens and even donuts. And to be honest, that's majority of what people order, whether it's online or in shop, is they're picking what's already created. So that's actually a focus of ours right now, from what that customer experience is in shop. You know, what do those assortment guides look like? What's on the menu boards? How do we help the speed of service and just take out the decision-making process for the customers if they don't want to do it? Of course, mm-hmm. the ability is still there if they want to customize their donut, but if they don't want to think about it and they want 12 suggestions, here you go. Here's a couple to pick from just to make it a lot easier and simpler.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Smart too, because I mean, well, let's face it, people, you said they don't know. You know, there's a reason vanilla is the number one selling ice cream, right? So
right.
you know, people don't know unless you show them all the options. And you guys do a great job of that. You have so many unique kind of combinations that it's almost like, I got to try that. Is that good? You know, and to your point, then, you know, a bacon donut being the number one flavor, I don't think anyone would assume that ever.
Right.
But you guys set that
up. Consistently for years. I mean, yeah. I think since I've started, and even just as our 23 numbers came in, it's still number one, which just amazes me.
That's funny. Now, you guys do a lot of philanthropic stuff, charity overlays, things like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we started partnering with Make-A-Wish last year, and that national campaign will be coming up in April or May timeframe this year, where each one of our locations throughout the U.S. raises money for their local chapter of Make-A-Wish. So there's a Make-A-Wish donut with blue and white sprinkles. Of course, you have the opportunity just to donate at the point of sale or online when you're checking out. So that's been a really great new partnership. Of course, they're about families and kids, which we are as well.
Awesome.
So in addition to having that national partnership, we have a program, the umbrella is called Quack Gives Back, which is, of course, a great little tag to tie into the brand. But we really challenge our franchisees to be involved in their local community. So while we have everybody involved in the Make-A-Wish campaign, they have the ability to partner with whatever organization is important to them in their local community. So, and those can look differently from whether, you know, it's a boys club, girls club, PTA, different fundraisers, but partnering with their local community nonprofits, we think is very important for us to be able to give back on that national as well as local level.
That's fantastic. You know, I have to throw this out because, I mean, you guys have such a cool brand. And, you know, I look at different things in the world to sort of combine like pop culture things. It seems like there might be an opportunity for you guys. You have the little rubber duck, right? Really cool, mm-hmm. well-branded. You got this beach vibe going, right? So I've seen all these guys with Jeeps. I'm not a Jeep guy. I'm a Land Cruiser guy, which is similar, but not a Jeep guy. So, but I'm seeing all these guys with rubber ducks ducking each other, whatever you want to call it,
yes.
with their Jeeps. So you got Jeeps, you got the beach, you got ducks, you got duck donuts. You guys got to get involved in that somehow. Somehow we got to be giving away donuts.
I know.
There's something there. There's something there.
Well, and you know, what's funny is we have just on a local level, a lot of Jeep meetups will happen in Duck Donuts parking lots. So they'll go in, they'll buy some ducks, they'll grab some donuts, and they do these meetups in parking lots. Yeah. But I agree, like on a big national partnership level, that would be amazing.
Let's give away a Jeep for the beach. You know,
yes.
I think you got something there. I think that's, you know, I think that works. So that's awesome. Is there anything else you want to talk about as far as the franchise? What makes a great franchisee? What's the future hold for Duck Donuts? Anything else you want to throw in before I got a couple other questions? But I wanted to open it up to you.
We're in growth mode. So we opened 32 shops last year. We'll open 45 this year, and want to continue to build that. So you know, just focused on building the brand across the U.S. as well as globally. And getting our existing shops to be more successful. So while the growth of opening shops is very important, we want our existing franchisees to be more profitable, more successful. We want them to open additional shops. So of course, this has been a challenge. 2023 was a challenging year from a transaction standpoint for a lot of people within the food and beverage industry. People obviously are watching their spend a little bit. And as much as we would love to think, people eat donuts every day. So we just have to become more innovative and more driving of how we're going to get people back in the door more frequently. So that's really what we're focused on right now.
Very cool. I mean, it's amazing to me. I go from my neighborhood in central Pennsylvania to your Cairo, Qatar, and Thailand. I mean, that's just, it's right. mind-boggling, you know?
It is mind-boggling. I agree.
So, you know, one other thing, when this time of year, I mean, let's face it, everyone starts thinking about working out and eating healthy and all that, and donuts don't necessarily slide right into that routine. Do you see that as a problem? Is this ever become an issue seasonally?
You know what, January, and again, I think sometimes just January is that people are recovering from the holidays and spending money and eating and drinking a lot during that time. So January is certainly always a slow time of year for us. But after that, you know, it's all about moderation, right? Of course, mm-hmm. and we sell coffee and we sell ice cream. So, yep. you know, there's lots of reasons to come into Duck. that maybe is a little less calories, but you know, certainly moderation is certainly good for everyone.
Well, I mean, donuts are happiness and the world needs more happiness. So, you know, it just goes hand in glove with donuts. So, all right. So if you had, if you went into your local Duck Donuts, you can only order one donut. What are you ordering?
I'm actually ordering, which I built earlier, the s'mores donut.
Ah, very good. Very good.
It's not fall because our fall donut is an apple donut, which is my favorite donut. But, you know, that's
your all-time favorite, the apple donut?
Yeah, the apple donut. So next fall, when that comes around, definitely suggest.
I'll try it. There's more than just apple. Come on, you guys, I mean, you don't just do one thing to it. What else is done to it? Is it just apple?
Well, yeah, it's like apple pie filling, if that makes sense. That's sitting in the middle of the donut with vanilla icing. Okay. And if you want to get fancy, you could drip some caramel on there.
I like
or,
that.
You know, add anything else like that.
Well done.
Some cinnamon sugar. Cinnamon sugar donut with the apple pie filling.
Ooh,
so, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, it's fun. It's great. Okay, so the last question I ask this to every guest, if you had one final meal, and you can't say a donut, and it can't be donuts. So what would you eat and why? What would it be?
So I would definitely not have to think too hard about this. It would be Mexican. Like I love Mexican food. So give me like a good taco platter with like beans and rice and like salsa and guacamole and some chips.
Awesome.
That'd be perfect.
Very good. Very good. Well, listen, this was fantastic, Betsy. I mean, you exude the happiness of Duck Donuts, and I think it's amazing what you've built, and you guys should be very proud. And it's a really great brand, and you're spreading happiness, which is always a good thing. So thank you so much for your time.
Sprinkling happiness.
I'm sorry. Sprinkling happiness. So I apologize. But that's fantastic. So thank you so much. Appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You got it.